It's time for conversations about our food and how it's grown on Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.
If you were going to pick any place in the world to have a gathering and talk about sustainable food systems, it's hard to beat where I'm sitting today. Now, let me just describe it. We're on a college campus, not just any college campus. We're going to get into that a little bit. But we're also overlooking Monterey Bay. We're between the ocean, beside an organic farm, and right on the other side of us are the redwoods. And it's beautiful. And we're in a big old barn. Now let's go back to who's having this. We're actually at UC Santa Cruz, University of California. There are other UCs I've been reminded of from time to time. But we're at UC Santa Cruz. It's appropriate to be there because they're getting ready to celebrate 50 years of talking about sustainable food systems and agroecology. And they're going to do it in a way of bringing people together and celebrating it in this old barn that's been recently remodeled. Well, I am really fortunate today to have a couple of guests with me that are going to be able to talk about that, Martha Brown and Daniel Press. And let me start first with Daniel. And Daniel, you are the executive director of the Center for Agroecology and Sustainable Food Systems at the University of California at Santa Cruz. Would you give me just a couple minutes of explaining this system? I mean, what is it that you do here at UC Santa Cruz and relating to food systems in the agroecology department?
I don't know if it's Martha or Ann or somebody else who said that we are the mothership of organic agriculture. We'd like to use that term for those science fiction, sci-fi buddies and friends of ours. This is the 50th year of a program that does research and training in this thing called agroecology, which is, among other things, before I get in trouble with all our agroecologists out there, among other things, it's applying ecological principles to growing food. Okay, so viewing agricultural systems as ecological systems and addressing agricultural problems with a very fine understanding of local ecologies, whether that's what's happening underground or plants and interactions between plants and pests and so on. So here we are at the University of California, Santa Cruz, which opened its doors in 1965. It was then the newest campus. It was a small campus. Let me just say that, so UC Santa Cruz was founded on the idea that we were going to try innovations in pedagogy, innovations in experiential learning, in residential learning, in active learning. No one had in mind that one of the big innovations and experiments on this campus would be organic agriculture, sustainable agriculture, agroecology, whatever you call it. That was not part of the plan. And it wasn't part of the plan because we were not one of the ag schools, one of the agriculture schools for the University of California. That was not our designation. It was not our mandate. Nonetheless, the students, some faculty, some staff, some community members got together in 1966-67, urging the campus to have a student garden. And so an eccentric, peripatetic Shakespearean actor turned gardener, Alan Chadwick, was recruited.
But somebody go looking for an Alan Chadwick type and say, let's bring them onto our campus and start working on this first on the garden?
Well, we probably would have to turn to Paul Lee to get the answer to that. Martha, maybe you know more about it, but as I recall, there were several people who, including Paul, who did look for help in recruiting somebody. And there was some countess, I think, even involved.
There was a countess involved who knew Alan. and knew Paige Smith, who was one of the founding faculty members.
I got to slow you down again. A countess?
A countess, yes.
We had a countess in Santa Cruz, California.
She was visiting. She was a friend. She was, I think, Bavarian. Her husband had been killed by the Nazis, but she knew Alan and knew that he was the right person to come do this. So there was a direct connection. He wasn't, you know, they didn't put out an open hire for the position. She said, this is the person you want. And he came.
Wow. Did they hire him at first, or was he volunteering his time? Now, Martha, we ought to go back and introduce you a little bit more, because you identify as principal editor?
Mm-hmm. I do lots of editing, but more things like journal articles, grant writing, that sort of editing.
So you had to write this story.
Yes, I've written this story a few times.
Yeah, Martha's being way too modest. Martha is institutional memory. Martha is interfacing with our many friends here in Santa Cruz and elsewhere. Martha is telling our story, telling it well. Martha is our conscience. Martha is far more than what is already a tremendous job, being an editor. She's really more of an author, interlocutor. She is many things to us. And if we need to, oftentimes when I need to know if some idea or project is consonant with the soul of the place, I'll look over at Martha and say, is this all right?
You know, I think that maybe is one difference from some of the land-grant universities, which exist in every state, has a land-grant university that's working on agriculture issues. California's actually got three campuses. And it's not you. It's amazing that you're not listed as one of those, Riverside and Berkeley and Davis. And yet you're very much into it. And when I say that it's one of the differences is, I don't identify anybody that's the keeper of the soul, you know, that is the, and here we're talking about programs that you're involved with that evidently touch people's souls. And let's go back on this journey again. So we had Chadwick come here and he starts working on the garden, and that somehow transitioned to an organic farm. Could you explain that transition, and then we'll talk a little bit about what's happened with that organic farm?
Well, Chadwick was this extremely charismatic figure who attracted students and community volunteers to take this, you know, brushy hillside up in the middle of the campus and turn it into this almost magical organic garden using very exacting organic techniques that he introduced, and he trained this cadre of students and community members, and they got so excited about it that they wanted to do something bigger. And so the idea was to translate those practices onto a bigger palette, which became the farm. And fortunately, the chancellor at the time, Dean McHenry, was a farm boy, and he supported this idea, and he gave the group of students and Alan this 17 acres on lower campus, sitting, you know, right at the edge of where we're sitting right now, to start a farm.
Now, it sounds to me like when you talk about going from being a garden to being a farm, that suggests a certain scale. I mean, when somebody does something in a garden, they're taking care of themselves and getting much satisfaction out of it. Daniel, this starts sliding into a different, almost commercial in a way, but getting to a scale where people could not only take care of themselves with the garden, but potentially make a living, get other people involved, employ people into a commercial enterprise.
Well, and that notion that this form of organic gardening could scale up to farming was very, very controversial at the time and still encounters resistance. There were many people in the early 1970s who looked at us and said, yeah, that's quaint, that's pretty, but you're never going to feed the world with organic. You remember, early 1970s, you're not really that far out from the Green Revolution, which was used the fiercest tools of industry and chemistry to grow tremendous amounts of food on enormous farms with a lot of machinery and chemicals. And that was how you were going to deal with hunger in the world. The notion that most of the world was feeding itself on small farms without agrochemical inputs was completely beside the point. And anyway, here the students, to their great credit, were interested in precisely that, precisely trying to scale up this very hand-intensive gardening idea down onto the farm. They even used a couple of draft horses, brother and sister draft horses, to do their plowing. 40-some years later, we can assert that, yes, you can scale organic agriculture up. You can produce a lot of food in a very clean and a very fair way, equitable way, but it requires a different way of doing things. And also it requires emphasizing different values. People often ask whether we can feed 9 billion people with organic agriculture. And although I'm being a little glib when I reply, I usually reply sarcastically that if you mean that you're going to feed those 9 billion people 5 16-ounce steaks a week, half of which they're going to throw out, half of the food of which they're going to throw out. No, we can't do that. That's not a model that we can replicate. But why should we? If that's what you're looking for, you're not going to get there. Instead, what you're looking for is diversified farms that are growing a wide variety of crops that come together to provide a nutritious, culturally enhancing diet, a diet that is fairly low on high intensive animal protein. Yes, you can totally do it. And there are studies that prove it. If we have any notoriety, if we have if we're known at all, if people loved us from afar, it's mostly because they've come to see us. And when you come to this site, I think people have a lot of reactions. One of them is surprise. One of them is surprise that on a University of California campus, especially one that is not a land-grant campus, it's not an agricultural school, here you have this thing happening. And they're surprised that it looks so good. They're surprised that it is so bountiful. They're surprised that the produce is so diverse and so rich. They're surprised that there are tent cabins housing apprentices on site. They're surprised that 3,000 grade school kids are coming with their classrooms to learn about food and science through gardening. So that visceral reaction to the place itself really gets into people, and they can't forget about it. I had a visitor from Dubai in March. She came with her daughter. She's at Zayed University, and she's trying to create some modest gardening program there. She couldn't get over what she was looking at. So that is the first element of it. Now, in terms of who has gone on, we have lots of famous apprentices who have taken the principles of growing beautiful, healthy food for everyone in a fair, equitable, just manner, and taken that elsewhere, whether it's Catherine Sneed with the Prison Garden Project, whether it's Karen Washington in New York City, Matthew Rayford in Georgia, and many, many others who are not just farming and sometimes not even principally farming. Oftentimes, they're advocates for diversified farming system. They're advocates for access to healthy food for all. So we don't know where our undergraduates and apprentices are going to go. We don't know what they're going to take from here. We try to expose them to a wide variety of techniques and perspectives in 6 months, or in the case of the undergraduates, over a few years. But no one here would claim that you leave the place and you are equipped to farm as much as somebody who's been at it for 10 years. It's just not the case. Nobody believes that. But it's a particular orientation. It's a particular set of skills and tools that are portable. Matthew Rayford is farming in Georgia. That's a very different climate system. It's a very different, these are very different soils, different pests, different crops. But there are certain principles that he can bring across the country and that work.
Well, let's talk about getting that experience here, Martha. People are going to have an opportunity to come here. Now, why don't you explain the party that you're throwing this summer and how people around the world could, in fact, come to Santa Cruz and participate in the celebration and of what's happening here at UC Santa Cruz of celebrating 50 years.
So we're calling this our first 50 celebration, which will be happening July 28th through 30th here at UC Santa Cruz. A lot of it will be centered here around the hay barn where we're sitting right now. It's going to be an experience of, you know, learning about what our apprenticeship graduates have done, what our some of our undergraduates have done through symposia. We'll also have a number of more casual sort of workshop type opportunities that will be taught by some of our graduates and by our staff and faculty that will expose people to many of the aspects of the work that we do. That's going to be Saturday afternoon. We'll have a big celebratory dinner where Alice Waters and Matthew Rayford will be speaking here at the Hay Barn for maybe about 500 people. So we're hoping lots of people get interested in that. And yeah, it's just going to be a fun weekend of farm tours and garden tours and really exposing everybody who wants to come to the many, many aspects of our work, not just the organic gardening part, but, you know, some of the policy work that we've done, some of the grade school education work, that sort of thing. So, yeah,
well,
lots of different things.
I'm definitely coming. I tell you what, it sounds like it's a good time. You're going to have good speakers. You're going to have good food. You're in a beautiful location. You're in this great old barn that has been remodeled. And the people feel really, really strongly what this represents, this type of farming, and they're drawn to it. And Martha and Daniel both have this question for you. It does seem to me that people are drawn to this program from really around the world that don't necessarily come from a farm. That's kind of hard to explain in itself. I mean, I remember growing up, and I grew up on a farm, that it naturally occurred to you, maybe I'll become a farmer someday. But how do you explain this interest of so many of the students, of people that you get from around the world that find you and feel that this is a journey that they want to be on? This is something that defies the typical model of, you know, marketing a program at a university.
Sure, and you're right. I mean, most of the folks who come to the apprenticeship or most of our undergraduates who choose one of the experiential classes where they're up planting food for the dining services and learning about organic farming have no farming background or very little, though a number of the apprentices have maybe done some farming and realize what they need is more grounding in the techniques. They need the science behind the practice. And so they come here for that because they've maybe, you know, done some community gardening or done a little bit of CSA work and realize, wow, you know, this is what I want to do, but I need more training. People see food as a way to make a difference socially. And I think we're seeing more and more of that they don't come from farming backgrounds. They don't necessarily see commercial farming in their future, but they see working on some kind of community farm or educational farm as a way to make a difference in the world and make the world a healthier place. And I think that's, especially in the last, say, decade, we've seen more and more of that, that people see food as a route to, you know, food justice work, as a way to make, you know, improvements in the world that they want to see happen. And they didn't come from farms.
They didn't come from farms. And now, thinking about our undergraduates, you know, I sponsor dozens of interns, undergraduate interns every year. And you can watch what happens to them when they go and work in the farm or in the garden. It dawns on them that they can learn this way, that they can put away their screens, their phones, their iPads, their computers, and that they can have a direct connection to the material world that they are living in. Their all their stress comes down. They feel like they are truly learning something. But also, it dawns upon them that there is something almost mission-oriented about what they're doing. There's some kind of healing, so oftentimes of themselves first, and then of those around them and of the world later. That's often a kind of, I see that progression in their thinking. But imagine what it means for those apprentices and undergraduates who do attempt farming after they leave here. If they don't come from farm families, they don't have land, they don't have water, they don't have capital, they don't have equipment, they don't have labor contracts, and they don't have access to markets. And they don't have mom and dad to ask about all that. So imagine the challenge for them. And imagine as a society how alone we leave them to go try this thing out. Because as a society, we're happy to spend tens of billions of dollars to support the big commodity crops, the big wheat, corn, soybeans, and so on, in the huge Midwestern farms. We're willing as a society to take on the risk with the farmers and help with their crop insurance and so on. But the organic farmer, the young person going out into organic farming, is in many sort of policy or societal senses alone. And that's not right. You know, we should partner with them. We should be with them as they make that journey into agriculture.
Well, this is perfect timing then, because I want to wrap up a little bit now. But I always go towards kind of our most optimistic view of the future. In this particular case, you know, we're talking about people being at the beginning of a journey, and the journey that we've just completed that you're going to celebrate is 50 years. So I'm not going to ask you to go 50 years, but let's do like 50 months. You know, so we go 50 months ahead on top of the 50 years behind us. And what will make you optimistic? What might we see to be encouraged about what can happen over this next 50 months? Martha, do you want to go first?
Well, I want to speak to something because we haven't touched on it, and that's the impact of the research that has taken place here. Because, again, we're not UC Davis, which in some ways gives us a little more freedom to do research that might not happen at a land-grant university. And the research that has been based out of our farm has had a tremendous impact in the area, especially on organic strawberry production and even conventional strawberry production. And I see that as something that I think we're going to do more of in the next 50 months. We're looking at a really interesting no-till research effort, because there's so much interest now in no-till as a way to sequester carbon. And so that's something we're going to take on, and something I'm really excited about, that I see producing some interesting results in the next 50 months. So I want to keep that in mind, that we're not just training people to be organic farmers and gardeners, which has been a big part of what we do, but we've also given researchers some real freedom to try some things they might not be able to try other places.
Right. If I was looking at the next 5 years instead of the next 50 years, I'll echo what Martha was saying. I'd like to see more research here. I'd like to see a cooperative specialist from the University of California assigned here. That would be great if we had a PhD scientist on our site who was looking out at the region, identifying agroecological problems that organic farmers face, and then doing research to solve those problems and bring them back. We've had some of that in the past because of budget cuts and so on. We've not had that research capacity, and I'd like to bring that back. In the next 5 years, it would be great if the combination of campus and community supported us even more so that we weren't quite the shoestring operation that we are. When you say we're celebrating our 50th, a lot of that was done with baling wire and tape. And I'd like a little less baling wire and a little more, I don't know, timber joinery. So that would be great. I think I'd like also to see the Farm and Garden and our programs have an ever greater influence on the quality of institutional food and the amount of it and the availability of it. So by that, I'm really talking about, let's talk about school food, whether you're in the elementary schools, the high schools, or at college. It turns out that there's food insecurity across all of those institutions. It also turns out that the food could be better in all of them. Now, the food's not bad here up at UC, but not enough students have access to it. Recent studies have shown that up to 40% of the University of California students report going hungry, being hungry. Why? Because the cost of living has gotten so high for rentals in communities where the university is located that they're trading lodging for food. This is unacceptable. It's just not remotely okay with any of us that you attend the University of California hungry. That's just not okay at all. So doing a lot more on that is a big priority. And then if somehow through our various partners and through some more receptiveness in the school food world, if we could start to make some inroads into school foods, that would be great. The ideal would be if schools made from scratch, healthy, delicious, appealing, mostly plant-based, mostly local food for their kids that got eaten and not thrown away. Bingo, that would be perfect.
Well, I'm going to jump in and help answer my own question too, because when I listen to you and I get optimistic because I'm optimistic that I'll continue to run into people that have been touched by your program, that are active in the food system, that are looking in what you just mentioned on farm-to-school programs and systems, and people finding, even some of them that are getting into the, you know, the urban rooftop gardens and community gardens and so forth. And I think that every time I bump into students or people that have been involved, I see a spark in their eye. I see it's been touched. They've been touched by what you do here, and it feels special to them. And I guess now I just want to wrap up, and maybe Martha, I should ask this final question to you. People want to get a piece of this magic, either participating in things that you have coming up that you've mentioned and just know more about the program at UC Santa Cruz. Where should they look? Where should they get the information?
Well, probably the most comprehensive place to look is on our website, which is not, it's a mouthful. It's a bunch of letters. It's casfs.ucsc.edu. That's the Center for Agroecology and Sustainable Food Systems. We are open every day just to come visit for free, 8 to 6. You can come up to the 30-acre farm. You can go up to the Alan Chadwick Garden, where it all started 50 years ago.
Love to have you come visit. We do a monthly free guided tour the first Sunday of every month from 2 to 3:30 with our volunteer docent program. And we'd love to have you. So lots of ways to connect. And of course, as I mentioned, our big party at the end of July. If you go to our website, you'll find all the information about it.
Well, I have a feeling that there's somebody listening to this particular podcast that's going to follow up, more than a few. Maybe because we're having this conversation, we'll have to have more of them, that they'll be discovering what you have to offer here. I really appreciate what you're doing here at UC Santa Cruz. This whole heritage that you've established and a vision for the future is exciting. And I want to thank you again, Daniel Press and Martha Brown, for being on Farm to Table Talk.
Great pleasure. Thank you, Roger.
Thanks so much, Roger.
You've been listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson. If you like what you hear, go to farmtotabletalk.com and follow us on SoundCloud, Facebook, and Twitter, or go to iTunes to subscribe and give us a review and a rating. Thanks for listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.